the FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, welcome along for another edition of the FWA podcast. Thanks for all your feedback over the last few weeks. It's been enjoyable doing it, and you seem to be liking it as well. I'm delighted to say that this week, our latest member of the Football Writers Association to join us is Matt Dickinson, the Chief Sports Correspondent for The Times. Morning, Matt. You well?
Yes, very well, thanks.
Excellent. We're fresh from another Champions League week, which is great. We're going to look back on that in a little while with Matt, and we're also going to look forward to a great weekend in the Premier League as well. But first of all, I thought we'd cast our attention to a much warmer place than it is now, Matt, Brazil. It's a funny situation, this, because as a football fan, I love Brazil. I've never been to Brazil, but I absolutely love the place. I love the football. I love everything about it. It just seems exotic to me. And there can be nothing better in my mind, apart from obviously a home World Cup, than a World Cup in Brazil. But yeah, it's fraught with problems. You wrote a piece this week about SoccerX being cancelled and more doubt being thrown upon one of the greatest sporting spectacles on earth. It's a strange old situation, this, isn't it? FIFA's got itself into a bit of a mess. The Brazilian Federation's got itself into a bit of a mess. We just need to get some football on the go.
Yeah, well, it's not very satisfactory. I mean, to one extent, there's always a sort of scare stories running up to any major event, as
true, yeah,
remember from the London Olympics. But, you know, these ones do have serious foundation. I don't think anyone doubts that, you know, there will be the right number of stadium built by the time the tournament kicks off. That much seems pretty safe. But there's an awful lot internal travel is known to be a particular problem. There's been problems with ticket sales already. And as you mentioned, this SoccerX cancellation, which it seems to be a sort of come down to a squabble over who actually owns the Maracanã, which has changed hands. So there's been a financial squabble over that. And of course, you know, the greater backdrop of the riots that we saw during the Confederations Cup. And that unrest, you know, is not specifically targeted at sort of ruining the World Cup, we think. It's more to do with, you know, government spending priorities. But the football tournament gives those protesters the chance to make maximum headlines. And FIFA have got to be worried that the football will continue to be potentially targeted. And that's obviously a worry for all of us, because, as you say, you're hoping the World Cup's going to be a great carnival. But at the same time, you know, if you're living in Brazil and you see, you know, millions, billions spent on football stadiums when, you know, people are still living in hovels, then you've got to understand their priorities.
I mean, I suppose we had more scare stories, I suppose, and maybe more serious ones in the build-up to South Africa, didn't we? And, you know, that was a legitimate concern about people's safety, and it's a, you know, we know it's a very dangerous place to be if you're in the wrong place. Same with Rio, isn't it? Same with parts of Brazil. But they usually do get it done, don't they? I mean, that's the thing we can rely on. I mean, I asked William Hill to price up whether there would be a World Cup in Brazil next year. The odds speak volumes, really, Matt. 50 to 1 on that it will be in Brazil next year, 12 to 1 that it won't be. I mean, it would be a massive shock if the World Cup was moved at this late stage, or if there were problems that stopped the World Cup happening.
Yeah, no, I think, yes, as you say, those odds reflect it. I think there's no danger at all that the World Cup will kick off, you know, on time, on schedule. And the thing is, you know, you mentioned South Africa. I mean, the nature of going to these tournaments is that, you know, the streets have never been cleaner, probably the roads have never been safer, because, you know, they know that the world's attention is on them. So South Africa drafted thousands of extra police and security staff around the stadium, onto the streets, because, you know, they know how bad it will look if fans, if media, if officials are run into trouble. So we slightly, when we go to these tournaments, to be honest, you know, I'm not complaining, but I'm just sort of putting it in the light that we probably don't see the country at its natural, at its normal state, because there is such an effort to clean it up. So I'm sure the World Cup will happen, but it will be interesting. You know, I'm sure Brazil will step up security, will beef up the police. So it will be fascinating to see whether the protesters still try and make themselves heard at the tournament, and how much trouble that causes. And as I say, you know, much as we want the tournament to take place without trouble, we do have to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, the if there are protests, they may well be very, very legitimate.
Just to finish on, I'll give you the odds in a second, but just to finish on a slightly lighter note, your job's a fabulous job. Working in football journalism's brilliant anyway, but how much do you look forward to a trip like this and an occasion like this as a top sports journalist, Matt?
Oh, probably this one as much as any. I mean, yeah, I did think, you know, the Home Olympics was unique in one way, but I have to say, if you'd have... You know, if you sit down with any football fan and just say, you know, what's your dream fixture, then, you know, you'd be very surprised if Brazil and particularly the Maracanã doesn't come into it. It's just, Rio itself is a spectacular place. England, we're pretty sure, are going to be based there, which is very nice of Roy Hodgson to look after the journalists that way. We're looking forward to playing a bit of keepy-uppy on the beach in a bit of spare time.
Yeah, I think when I see Roy Hodgson, all he's got really is the journalists at heart, hasn't he? That's all
absolutely.
He really thinks about, I think.
I'm sure that was uppermost in his mind. Well, put it this way, it'll be more popular than Fabio Capello sticking us out in Rustenburg.
Yes. Yeah, you can tell a lot about an England manager and his relationship with the press, can't you?
Exactly.
The odds on the World Cup, just to finish off this little section. Brazil are the favourites at home at 100-30. Argentina, 9-2. How they would love to win it there, eh? Germany, 9-2. Spain, 11-2. Belgium, 14-1. Holland, 16-1. Colombia, 20-1. Italy, 20-1. Yep, England the next, 22-1, the biggest price they've ever been, Matt, for a major competition. Well, in my lifetime, and probably your lifetime anyway. We don't have to dwell on this too much, but we spoke to Paul McCarthy about this. When we spoke to Paul, it was just after England had qualified, and we were saying that 22-1, it's about right. The bookies have finally kind of levelled off a little bit, as has the England football fan in general and the media as well.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think this is the most realistic that, you know, the country has been. I mean, whether it will that will last going into June next June, we'll see. But no, I think for once we're all on the same page on this, that we know that we are going there trying to do our best and doing our best. You know, maybe quarterfinals at best. We'll have to obviously see the draw, see what type of route so that we get ahead, and to be honest, most of all, see what first 11 turns up, because, you know, as we saw in the Poland game, the first 11 flying fit and well is actually a pretty decent team, but it only takes two or three injuries. We've seen Joe Hart, you know, suddenly in trouble on the bench and very little backup. So it only takes a couple of major players to have problems, and England's odds change pretty dramatically.
Let's look back on the Champions League week. It's been fantastic. Well, we've had goals all over the place, apart from Group A, strangely enough. Two 0-0 draws in Group A this week. There were goals in every single other game, and plenty of them as well. Manchester City, first of all, Matt, fantastic result for them in the end. I mean, they let a couple of goals in, as they tend to do in Champions League football, by the way. I think only once have they managed to keep a clean sheet at home in the Champions League, and that was against Bayern Munich, believe it or not. But they won 5-2, so, you know, look at the positives through, and that's what they've craved. Everyone there breathing a sigh of relief now that they've got into the next stage of this competition.
Well, it gives Pellegrini a bit of breathing space. You know, mm-hmm. It's been a bit of a turbulent time in the Premier League, obviously a few bad defeats away from home. So I just think it gives him just a small sort of, a very, you know, let's not get carried away, which is he didn't have quite the challenge of the groups that Mancini said he had, but it just gives him a little tick in one box that he's taken the team further than Mancini managed. I think, you know, we've seen the Negredo Aguero partnership really blossom when it's been put together. Obviously we've never doubted Aguero's class, but Negredo's come in and they seem to dovetail very neatly, and they've obviously still got Jovetic and Dzeko in reserve. So no, they're looking, I mean, it's, you know, still a bit to be ironed out. He's still fiddling with systems. He's still got to sort out this away form. But I think having qualified with a bit of ease, that would be reassuring for Pellegrini.
Mm. We're betting on when each of the clubs, English clubs, will drop out of the Champions League. It's called a stage of elimination betting. The last 16 is the favourite as far as Manchester City goes, around the even money mark.
Obviously, they've got a few months now to hopefully get, you know, company back playing regularly, because I still think with the defence, there's still a significant issue there that they're going to have to tighten up. You mentioned about letting in goals, and that's if they're going to become proper contenders for this tournament, I still think they've got a way to go. And also, we've seen that, you know, there are exceptions to this, but generally, it takes 2 or 3 years of almost acclimatizing to the tournament. Even if you've got experienced players like Yaya Toure, Aguero, and others, often you need to sort of get to the quarterfinals 1 year, experience that, get to the semis the next year. It's almost like, you know, stage by stage. So it would almost be sort of against form for City to put a massive run through to the very late stages.
Mm. Would you go with that? Then the last 16 would be as far as they go.
Well, I mean,
it depends on who they get, obviously. Yeah, exactly. You look at the top, the team they're likely to finish second behind Bayern Munich, aren't they, in the group? But if you look at the top teams in all those other groups, tricky games ahead.
I mean, I think that, you know, if City, with their resources, the strength of their team, I think they will be hoping to get to the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. I think to look beyond that would be, you know, certainly ambitious. But last 16 or quarters, certainly if they got to the quarters, then you know, partly depends on the draw. But that's realistic at this stage, I think. Yeah.
5-2 it is for Manchester City to go out at the quarterfinal stage. Let me run through the other results for English clubs. Manchester United getting that 0-0 draw, as I said, which puts them top of the group by a point from Bayer Leverkusen. Arsenal, fantastic victory in Borussia Dortmund. They do pretty well against the German clubs, Arsenal, away from home recently, and that puts them top of their group, of course. And 3 points clear of Borussia Dortmund, level on points with Napoli in Group F. Chelsea, they're 3 points clear of Schalke in Group E after doing to Schalke what they did away from home. All round, Matt, you know, a good week. I mean, Man United obviously should have won that game. The penalty where Robin van Persie hit the post himself, and Hernandez, he would have scored that 99 times out of 100, you'd say. So, I mean, they shouldn't be too disheartened with a draw away, should they?
No, I mean, I still think they're still finessing things with David Moyes. I still think, I mean, particularly the wingers are not firing as he would like. I mean, obviously, he can rotate the strikers a bit as he has done, and be pretty confident certainly that when it comes to the big games, he'll put Rooney obviously and Van Persie together, and they're as good as any combination out there. But yeah, I still think, you know, Fellaini, the sending off obviously doesn't help, but he's still finding his feet. Not quite. Seems to be slowing the play down a little bit in that midfield. So I still think there's a bit of fine-tuning to come, and obviously with a big game coming up against Arsenal on Sunday there, for once United, you know, it's been a long time since United will feel a bit twitchy about Arsenal coming, but I think that's going to be the case.
That's certainly true. Which of the English clubs, I'm going to really put you on the spot here, which of the English clubs do you think would go furthest in the Champions League this season, Matt?
Well, on form, you'd say Arsenal. Yeah. But then, you know, obviously they lost at home to Dortmund as well. I mean, I think Chelsea, there's something about, you know, I mean, Mourinho's got a very strong calibre in this tournament, and in some ways, you know, in terms of his know-how, I don't think can be underestimated. You've put me on the spot.
Yes, I have.
Even without seeing the draw, I would say I always find it hard to back against Mourinho squeezing something extra out of his team. I think Arsenal is a fascinating story. Now they've got that huge win. I think clearly, you know, we keep saying they need to beat top teams to prove themselves. Well, they've done that in Dortmund, and it's. I have to say, I was losing the faith in Arsene Wenger. Like many people, was thinking, you know, has he gone past his prime, and will there be a happy finish to his? Can there be a happy end to his time at Arsenal? And suddenly, we're having to row back and think, well, it's possible, and that's exciting, but it's still the unknown.
Yeah, certainly is. I mean, your opinion pretty much tallies up with the bookies. The bookies have got to Chelsea as the first of the English clubs in the list of outright betting. Bayern Munich are the favourites at 5-2. Barcelona 9-2. Real Madrid the same price as Barca, 9-2. Then you've got Chelsea and PSG at 14-1. Arsenal only just 2 points back at 16-1. With Man City, also Borussia Dortmund and Atletico Madrid. Then you've got Man United at 18-1 as the last of the four English clubs. Let's cast our minds to the Premier League weekend then, shall we? Yeah, some great games in store, and Matt's already alluded to one of the standout fixtures, and it's the last one of the weekend as well. We can build up to this. Sky can go crazy with all these Super Sunday stuff, and we'll see lots of reruns of rerun Nistelrooy, Martin Keown, etc, etc. Man United versus Arsenal, great fixture, Matt, isn't it? We know that, and you've said there, suddenly, I mean, who would have thought, you know, a year ago today, if you like, that it would have been the way it is. I mean, Man United are still the favourites, 23-20 to win at home. It's 5-2 the draw, and Arsenal are priced up at 9-4. Last week, we were talking on this podcast about, are Arsenal actually flat-track bullies? You know, they'd beaten everyone before them, including Tottenham, actually, to be fair, which people kind of forgot about. But they'd been beaten by Borussia Dortmund. You know, they then lost again to Chelsea in the Cup, albeit with a slightly weakened squad. What would they do against Liverpool? Well, when they put in one of their best performances of the season against Liverpool, now they've gone away to Borussia Dortmund. A week is a long time in football. Suddenly, they're back, like, almost like the favourites for the Premier League again. Crazy.
I know, when it's, and, well, as I said before, we keep sort of thinking, well, you know, they're going to come unstuck in the Premier League. They've got some, and yeah, you know, they have got some tough games to come, and I don't think we can properly judge whether they've, you know, are actually favourites for the Premier League till they've had two or three tough fixtures in the next month. But the fact is, it's pretty hard to say that they're not contenders now, and that's even that is beyond what many of us would have thought a couple of months ago. Now, clearly, Ozil is a significant factor in that. You know, when you make your record signing, by far, bring in a world-class player of, you know, of his stature, then that's going to change the picture. But as I think we saw in the Dortmund game, a lot has come down to defensive solidity as well. I mean, Wenger, he sort of chopped and changed the defence for a long time last year and stuck with Vermaelen, and then finally in the sort of spring, you know, he settled on Koscielny and Mertesacker, stuck with those two, and I have to say, you know, they've been outperforming what most of us thought was possible from them. They're looking incredibly solid. Now, that clearly is a credit to them and to Wenger. Equally, we do have to say that, you know, should one of those get injured, you would not look at, you know, the reserves, the other options, and be hugely confident. So that's one of those areas where Arsenal seem to have it absolutely spot on at the moment, but at the same time, you know, there's just that nagging doubt of if someone drops out, if something goes wrong, is this one of their weak spots that will be exposed?
Yeah, and historically, Arsenal do tend to pick up a lot of injuries, don't they? If you look at the injury list in the Premier League, Arsenal always seem to have 6 to 8 players who are either heavy doubts or they're out of a game, so it must be a worry. It's taken a long time for them to spend money. They didn't spend it all, did they, of course? Because, you know, they've got some left. If they were planning on buying Suarez as well, so you could quite easily see them strengthening in the January window if Wenger's ready to buy someone.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there'll be a bit of a clamour for him, as usual, to spend more money. But it's not his style at all, unless...
it's not, no.
You know, the last thing he likes doing is that sense of sort of buying on the hoof. I mean, he has done it. There was that famous sort of supermarket sweep, wasn't there, just before the window closed with Arteta and others.
Yes.
But he's, the more he's shoved into doing that, sometimes with Wenger, the more he sort of digs his heels in. So it will be fascinating. I mean, I expect United probably are more likely to try and spend in January and potentially even spend big. I think they felt like maybe they were too cautious in this window. They obviously got Fellaini, but missed out on a few other targets. Moyes wanted to sort of give his full squad a go. Ed Woodward was just settling into his job running the club. And I think, yeah, now that Moyes has had a chance to look at his team and his squad, I think he's seen an awful lot of changes he would like to make. Of those two clubs, I would be expecting United to potentially do something big in January more than Arsenal.
You've already been put on the spot once by me today, Matt. I'm going to do it again. What about this Manchester United-Arsenal game? Can Arsenal go and do to Manchester United what they did to Borussia Dortmund?
Well, I think they can. I mean, put me on the spot. I'll probably go for a draw. To be honest, I don't see Arsenal losing. That's one thing I would say. I think they've got that form and confidence and, as I say, defensive solidity. I mean, Van Persie, you know, if anyone can upset that, then, you know, potentially it's Rooney and Van Persie. But I just don't see that United quite have enough players in top form. I don't see that they quite have the slickness, fluidity at the moment. So, I think if Arsenal come with the same, say, form and confidence that they've been showing in recent weeks, I think they'll be very hard to beat and won't be beaten.
Yeah, you can back that eventuality. So you're basically backing the draw and Arsenal. So Arsenal not to get beat, effectively. And that's 8-13, which is just a bit odds on, but it's not bad to get two bets in there with you. And, you know, who could rule out Ramsey grabbing another goal in the game? 7-2 to score any time. Looks an absolute standout price for a player who is the biggest transformation in a player from one season to the next I may have ever seen. I know it's early days in the season and I may live to look stupid, but I can't remember another player transforming themselves so much, Matt, can you?
I can't. I mean, honestly, if I was going to think of any, I probably might even come back to another Arsenal player, Robert Pires, who
I remember
in one season, you know, I think we all given him a terrible time for looking effete and looking, you know, just looking like someone who was going to be kicked out of the Premier League, and I think the next season he may have come back and even won the Footballer of the Year. He's just I remember myself sort of lodging it as a thought in the back of my head of withholding the worst criticism and just giving people a chance, but to settle in. And that was, I mean, he did it as a foreigner. Maybe it was just getting used to the league, but in a homegrown player, certainly I can't remember a transformation like this.
Yeah. 13 goals already this season, and it's not just that he's scoring, they're absolute corkers, a lot of them, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And that's, I mean, again, I think Wenger said last night it's just a lesson in not making definitive judgments. I mean, that's in football, probably more than any other area of life, we love a definitive judgment. We all think, we all have an opinion, and that's part of the fun of the game. But and also, let's face it, it's part of the fun of the game to be proven wrong, and that's certainly what Ramsey and Arsenal seem to be doing most weeks at the moment.
Yeah, just to round off on the Premier League weekend, the other TV games, Norwich versus West Ham on the Saturday evening. Then you've got three games on Sunday: Tottenham, Newcastle, Sunderland, Manchester City, and Manchester United versus Arsenal. We'll let Matt get back to his day job. But before we do, Matt, the moment I know everyone who comes on the FWA podcast looks forward to, and that's sticking up your bet of the weekend. And this is the third time I've put you on the spot in one podcast. What would you be looking at? You seem to like that Arsenal not to lose bet.
Yeah, no, I think so. That's, yes, well, and the odds, as you say, not bad.
For no.
I'll stick with that one. I'll stick my tenner there.
Yeah, 8-13 and Arsenal not to lose. So it's Arsenal and the draw in the double chance market there. Matt, it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Cheers, Lee.
Thanks for your time. We'll have one of Matt's colleagues from the FWA on this time next week. You can download the podcast at William Hill's website, which is williamhill.com/podcast. You can also listen to it at the Football Writers Association website, which is footballwriters.co.uk. It's available on iTunes and at Audio Boo as well. Thanks for listening and downloading the podcast. And if you're having a bet on any of the matches this weekend, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.